The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but wonder, is God going to take care of America? Is our future going to be secure? Well, my friend, perhaps a better way to ask that question is with alternate futures, because the truth is America has two possible futures, one where she returns to God, the other where she keeps going the way she is now, morally speaking. In any event, why don't we find out? What better way to settle this than to take a trip 10 years into the future to see the non-God scenario? Yes, I'm proud to introduce a new feature on the Bob Siegel Show. Welcome to the first installment of Headlines from America's Future. Actually worked. Not only did I go 10 years into the future, I was also transported right up to a newspaper stand. Wow. I wasn't sure they would even have newspapers anymore 10 years from now, but they do. And not just any newspaper. The beloved, prestigious New York Times. Although, actually, I see they've changed the name. It's no longer called New York Times, just York Times. Apparently, the word new is now considered discriminatory toward anyone who is old, but same quality paper. And here's the headline. Supreme Court rules that U.S. Constitution is unconstitutional. I guess that's enough to take in for now. Back to the present. Fortunately, we still live in the present where there may be time to curtail the trends of our country. In that vein, I was going to watch the Democrats debating last week. I really was. I was going to watch to see who can outdo whom in their brilliant ideas for fixing our country. But then I thought of about 100 things I would rather do. My list of 100 better things to do included watching a documentary on how to assemble a flashlight and having a canker sore removed. Yes, the Democrats have become so predictable that I know what they're going to say before they even say it. However, it is still important to pay attention to this election coming up. Trust me, it will be the most important election in our country's history. And my special guest tonight is going to talk, among other things, about election fraud. The Election Integrity Project California is a nonpartisan, nonprofit, public benefit corporation. For over 8 years, it has trained over 10,000 citizens to observe, document, and research California elections. EIPCA recently partnered with the Washington, D.C.-based legal group Judicial Watch in a lawsuit against California's Secretary of State and Los Angeles County. Here to tell us all about it, serving on their board, Ruth Wise is Vice President, Director, and Legislative Oversight Coordinator for the Southern Region. Ruth Wise, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Bob. It's a real thrill to be here with you tonight.
Well, it's great to have you too. So tell us first, tell us a little more about your organization and maybe a little bit about how you got involved with them.
Right. Well, right after, I think, the 2028 election, there were people all over the state who felt like maybe there was something a little strange about election results that they were seeing. And there were five women who didn't even know each other. They were from all over the state who kind of took the same path of saying, well, we need to get involved, get in the trenches and find out what's going on. And they did that in 2010, and they were horrified at what they saw. They felt like our elections were in chaos. And they came together, again, they still didn't know each other, but came together in Texas at True the Vote. And they met one another there, and then they were able to start Election Integrity Project to start training the citizens to provide oversight for their own electoral process. And it has evolved from there. In 2017, we were able to become a 501c3 organization. I got involved just 2 months after they initiated the program. So I'm pretty much a founding member, and we've been working ever since.
Now, they've been pretty lawless in Sacramento. Has this organization specifically gotten pushback from Sacramento? Have they targeted your organization specifically?
Well, not that we can prove. We're catching a great deal of flack in terms of, we get digital interference and hacking our telephones, our computers, things like that. But there's no way of telling where it's coming from. But somebody knows where out there wants to stop us.
I know where it's coming from, but yeah, you're right. Who could prove it?
Exactly. So, but we continue our work. We just pray and move on. And we now have almost 9 years of documentation and research to prove what they started out to prove, and that is that our elections in California are incredibly corrupt, and as a result, we're no longer living in a republic in California. We have an oligarchy here.
Well, yeah, well, that was certainly true when Proposition 8 passed and it was overturned by judges. I heard somebody on TV, I believe he was a police officer, and he said there is literally no way of knowing how many illegal immigrants in California are voting. Isn't that true? Because they're given driver's licenses, but even if they weren't, you don't have to show ID when you vote anyway. So on two counts, it seems that they're protected.
That's absolutely correct. The other reason is that the Secretary of State and all of the registrars of voters are forbidden from seeing the list of people who are in this country as non-citizens and as illegals. So there's no way that they can compare the voter rolls to a list that would let them know who's on them illegally.
What a nightmare. Now, what happened specifically in our last election in 2018? Let's talk about the most recent one.
Okay, well, we had a spike in some things that we've been seeing since 2012, but an enormous spike in a couple of things. One, the number of people who are signed up to receive a vote-by-mail ballot, and I hope we can talk about that later, but there are an awful lot of people in California in that category, and they didn't receive their ballot. And the number that didn't receive their ballot was so much bigger than in other elections that we have been hearing. We are still hearing from people saying, I didn't get my ballot. I went down. I had a vote in person. Some of those people have an absentee ballot for a reason. They can't get to the polls, so they were disenfranchised. Others of them actually showed up to the polls and said, I want to vote because I never got my ballot. And they were informed that their ballot had been received and processed and counted prior to election day.
You're kidding.
No, we're getting more and more of those reports.
So, and they've obviously counted it the way Sacramento.
So we believe that a lot of those missing ballots fell into the wrong hands. How that happened, of course, you know, is anyone's guess. But then it is so easy to get a ballot counted, even when it's not the original voter's signature, that a lot of people were disenfranchised that way.
And were there any stats done? I just have to ask, how many Democrats were claiming they didn't get their ballots and how many of them were Republicans?
We don't look at things from a partisan point of view, so we have not run that. We do not know. No, plus we only have the statistics of people who come to us and report this happening to them, and also from our observers who were in the polls and overheard the conversations and then documented that. So that's how we know. The second spike that happened in 2018 was the number of people whose registrations were changed without their knowledge and permission. And so they showed up to the polls to vote as they always had, only to find out that they had been changed to vote by mail. Well, they didn't know that. They never received a ballot, but now the only way they could vote was provisionally.
I was always under the impression that even if you got your ballot by mail, you could always go down and vote in person.
If you get a vote by mail ballot and you have a polling place where your name is on the roster, you can take that ballot in on election day and surrender it, and then you get to vote in person.
But these people were going down and they were just saying, we don't even see your name on the list?
No, these were people who always voted in person, showed up, their name was on the list, but it said next to their name that they had been mailed a vote-by-mail ballot.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we've been able to track that back somewhere between 75 and 85% of those instances. The individual had had an interaction with the DMV within the previous year. And so this new motor voter law is coming in, and it is changing people's registrations, changing their party affiliation. And that's going to be really important this upcoming primary, which is the only time in California that your party affiliation matters. And we want to make sure that people check their registration before election day so that if they've been moved to a party that they don't want to be on or move to no party preference, that limits the ballot that they're allowed to vote on. And so we want to get them to repair that before elections.
Wow. So what can be done? With another election coming up, probably you would probably agree this is the most important election in our country.
I would, yes.
The soul of America and whether or not we will remain a republic.
The two directions are very, very clear. Yeah. Yes.
And what can be done? Do you have much hope? I know your organization is doing a lot.
Let's
talk about the success.
We are making some efforts. Of course, it was really great to win that lawsuit when we hired Judicial Watch as our attorneys.
Judicial Watch is wonderful, aren't
yes.
they? They get more information than anyone else.
But our materials and our research and our data was what was used as evidence in that lawsuit. And then they were very good as attorneys to make that be a win for us and for all Californians. And that's a good place to start, but it's limited. What we are doing now is we've initiated an inquiry and analysis into county by county for the 2018 election to find out what happened, to find out into whose hands those missing ballots fell, to find out which voters were disenfranchised by having a ballot counted that they claim they didn't cast. And also, we have something that vote-by-mail people may not be aware of, and that is a duplication process. Because many of the ballots that come in by mail are not countable once they get opened because they've been crinkled or rumpled, or they have been marked improperly with the wrong implement, or there's a stray mark on them, and they can't go through the counting machine in that condition. So they're sent to a couple of people in a corner, and those people actually copy your ballot over onto a fresh ballot. You have to hope that they do it right because there's no oversight there.
And you have to hope that they don't do it twice if they
precisely
want to go a certain way.
And so the way that you voted may not be the way your vote was counted ultimately, and you have no way of knowing that.
Don't we also have dead people on the rolls still?
We have a lot of, we do that research a lot, and we have a lot of deceased people still on the rolls, a lot of people who've moved out of the state a long time ago, yes.
Yeah, so those of you out there that are skeptics and you don't believe in the resurrection, elections prove resurrections because people come out of the coffins every election and they vote. It's amazing. We'll be right back.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
More beautiful.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 96.1 FM, 1170 AM. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'm here with Ruth Wise of the Election Integrity Project in California. We had just left off with dead people rising from the grave and voting. Go ahead and continue, Ruth.
Right. Well, you know, there are systems that are supposed to be in place to remove the deceased from the voter rolls, but they just aren't working. You know, when you have bureaucracies as large as the one that runs California, there's always going to be a problem with that. So,
but it's not just bureaucracy. Some of this is deliberate, isn't it?
Well, you know, that certainly is what we suspect. We can't necessarily prove that, but we do know that some of the things they are supposed to be doing, like asking for certain death rolls and stuff, they're simply not asking for
things that they could do to fix it. So they're not
only
very
could
motivated.
Do, but are required to do, and they're not right. doing that. That right. must be intentional.
Yeah, we're not only a sanctuary state as far as immigration goes, we're a sanctuary state as far as election goes.
So we would ask the loved ones, people who pass away, to make that part of what they do as they're closing down the estate is to contact the registrar
that is interesting.
And have their names taken off.
I'll bet very few people even think about that
right,
at those times.
Right. When my father passed away, I checked with the mortuary and I said, do you turn the names over to the registrar of voters because you're the one that issues the death certificate? And they said, no. And I said, why not? I mean, that would make a logical thing for them
well,
to
I don't
do.
Know if your father was a Republican. Maybe he shouldn't be hasty. Let him come back and vote again. Oh, boy. Okay, so anything else you want to say about, we were talking about what had happened in 2018 and what
right.
we're going to try to do to fix it for
right.
2020.
Oh, I started to say that we're doing an inquiry and analysis. And one of the things that we hope to be able to do is look at those duplicated ballots and find out how many people were correctly duplicated and how many maybe weren't. Find out how many people didn't vote because they filed a provisional ballot because their VBM was missing, and then to find out that the vote by mail was actually the one that was counted. So once we find that out, we'll do a county report as we finish each county. We've begun with 6 counties, Sacramento, San Mateo, Nevada, Napa, and Madera. And then we've started the second list by filing our open records request for San Diego County and for Orange County.
Are you finding that some counties are worse than others?
Well, we're not that far yet. I mean, okay. We obviously suspect that that will be the case. And we started where we did, actually. And I gave you the wrong counties that we started in. I'm sorry, I had a different list. But we started with counties that were throughout the states. We had 2 in the north, 2 in the central, 2 in the south. And also these particular counties we began with are counties where we saw a lot of problems, which our observers reported great problems. San Francisco, for example, Ventura, Orange. And we do expect to be able to uncover what happened in those counties, yes.
Do you suspect that those who are unconcerned about fair elections are doing so because they realize that contrary to what we hear in the media, liberalism just isn't that popular, and that if it's a fair election, chances are they're going to lose?
Well, I think what I would say is that in the last 20 years, I can't think of a single large law change in California that was voted on by the legislature had the support of over 50% of the citizens in California. So you look at a legislator and say, why would a legislator vote for something that was clearly unpopular if he felt he was going to be held accountable by his constituents in the next election? That tells you then that these legislators know that they have managed to corner the electoral process, and they can manipulate it so that they don't fear being unelected.
Or maybe there's a few special interest groups that fund them that they still care about, but not the people at large.
Right.
And so many people are leaving California. So many conservatives it just makes some think that California is hopeless now. Do you see more hope than that?
We do, because we know how many patriots there are in California who have been fighting in all of the arenas that there are, parental rights and gun rights and all the rest. But the rest of the country has kind of blown us off. Even the conservative talk show hosts have said, oh, yeah, that's just California. They're just a bunch of fruits and nuts. And we know that's not the case. So we've been able to work also with a wonderful law firm, also out of D.C., the Landmark Legal Foundation. And they are not as much litigators, but they have been working with the DOJ and the Department of Homeland Security, filing complaints on our behalf to try to get the federal government to do their job and to investigate what's going on in California.
Okay. So list a few things that make you possibly more hopeful about 2020. What's going to be different?
I think people are waking up. I think the topic of election manipulation and election fraud, if you will, we talk about corruption. We don't talk so much about fraud. But those headlines are coming more often, and we're seeing them, and we're hearing more and more people concerned. And we are getting more people stepping up to work with us, to help us. They believe in us. And also the fact that now other states are coming to us. We are Election Integrity Project California, and other states are forming an Election Integrity Project under our umbrella for their states, because they're recognizing where California has gotten to, and their state is hard on that same path. And so they are trying to avoid getting as deep in the hole as California is. So now we've opened up in Nevada and in Arkansas and in Arizona and in North Carolina. And we are about to open in a couple of other states. So this is a national movement, and that's a good thing.
And some of those are much more conservative states than California, and yet you have people there trying to go the way of California. That's interesting.
Yes, indeed. And it's funny, when you talk to people from some of these states, they blame it on these people who have left California to go to these other states.
Well,
and we're saying
happens.
No.
People from California go to Texas because they can't stand the strangling government regulations. First thing they try to do is get those things going on in Texas.
However,
it's almost a form of insanity.
If you take a look at the situation, you realize it's not Californians who are changing the other states. This is homegrown. It's happening from within the state, and you can see it's been going on for a long time.
Certainly from the universities and a lot of our public schools.
Right.
We'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connors' strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. It's an honor to have Ruth Wise of the Election Integrity Project California. Ruth, we touched on this earlier, but I'd like to get into this in a lot more detail. And I know that on several occasions in the past, I've heard you issue great concern about voting by mail. So please explain this to our audience like they're third graders, because I don't think most people are hearing this stuff, and it's very, very important.
Well, starting in 1998, California gave up the absentee ballot, and they decided to have no excuse absentee voting so that anyone who wants to vote by mail can simply get on a permanent list and do that. And the danger there is, of course, that when you're voting by mail, you're putting your ballot in an envelope. You may be putting it through the postal service.
You're putting it through several people.
Well, yes. So in the first place, you're not casting a private ballot. Your name is on it. And that means when it gets down to the other end, now obviously by the time they count your ballot, the envelope is separate from the ballot itself. But the whole process of shuffling and evaluating and looking at signatures and that kind of thing, all of that is done with knowing full well who you are, where you live, what party you're registered with, and all the rest. And of course, humans are only humans. And even if it's something subliminal, it's possible that that could make a difference in terms of whether they decide to ultimately count your ballot. So that's one concern. A second concern is that because it has to go through so many different hands, things can happen to those ballots. There can be a mole in the post office. There can be a mole in the registrar's office, and your ballot disappears because they don't like your zip code or they know your name. Things like that we know have happened, and then just the process of manipulating them. And then, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the whole process of duplicating your ballot could mean that the ballot they ultimately count in your name is not the ballot that you marked or marked the way you marked the ballot. So there's a real concern for voting by mail, and people are doing it just out of a sense of convenience. But quite frankly, since 1998, there has been a real push by all your public officials, both major parties, to vote that way, vote that way, vote that way, because they think ultimately there will be a greater voter turnout if they can convince people to do that and do it early. There's not. And so what also happens is that many people don't want to vote early, so they will wait until election day to turn their ballot in at the polls or at the registrar's office. And then there are mountains of ballots to count there with a very finite period of time to do it, which rushes the registrars. It means they're not going to
be
handled correctly.
So now they're going to be
sloppy. Exactly. And so all of that is of great concern to us. And frankly, I will not submit my ballot in that fashion. I want to vote in person. And I want people to know that even if you are one of the counties that's doing the Voters' Choice Act, where you now no longer have a neighborhood polling place, you can still vote in person, and they neglect to tell you that, but that's part of the choice involved in Voters' Choice Act. You can go to a vote center, you can show up and give them your name and address and cast a safe in-person ballot. You don't have to use the ballot they mailed to you. So we encourage people to get off the list if you're in a county where you can get off the list. If you cannot get off the list, then at least go down and vote in person on election day and surrender your ballot. Don't surrender it anywhere other than your own polling place, though, because then that would be worse. Then you'd have to have a provisional ballot.
Now, when you go down to an actual poll to vote in person, do they guarantee an equal number of Democrat and Republican workers there to make sure it's fair?
No.
Because I always hear about Republican precincts, Democrat precincts. That causes me a lot of concern.
No, there's no effort to balance that at all.
So who knows what they're even doing, even when you go in person?
Well, and that's what our observers have been uncovering.
Okay, so but you are allowed to... Organizations like yours are allowed to send observers there, though, right?
Yes.
By law, they have to allow them?
California is one of the few states in the nation that allows the citizens to observe their entire process.
California doing something right?
Exactly.
We haven't gone quite as insane as I thought.
We really are the only one that had, yeah,
good
had that
for
great
you,
observation.
California. I didn't think you had it in you.
So as long as we follow the rules, which basically says you can't interfere with the process, we can be there. We can actually step in at the moment an infraction is happening, and we train our observers how to do that. So they are staying within the law, but then they can stop the wrongdoing right then and there, protecting the rest of the ballots throughout the day, which is why it's so important to have those observers there and why it's so important that we have more and more people joining us in that task.
Can you talk a little bit about voter identification? People try to sell this argument that it's racist because supposedly certain minorities can't get ID, and yet you need ID to buy liquor. You need ID to get into the Democrat convention, actually. You need ID to fly a plane, to stay in a hotel. And have there ever really been any facts to back that up? I know back in the Jim Crow laws they were doing that, but I think people are trying to conflate that with today.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, the strictest voter ID law in the nation came before the Supreme Court. And the people who were trying to prove that it was discriminatory and would disenfranchise people scoured the entire state and could not find one single person who would testify to the fact that they would be disenfranchised with having to produce that state-required voter ID. So they lost that Supreme Court case.
Okay, that's interesting because I know a lot of states still don't require ID, ours being one of them. What, doesn't that become enforceable now with that Supreme Court ruling?
No, it just means that if a state wants to pass that law, it's much more likely that it will survive a challenge.
Okay.
But there are about 26 to 28 states that have some form a voter ID required, some of them weaker, some of them stronger, and then the rest still have none. And California is one of the ones that has no voter ID law. So when you pair the fact that when you register to vote, there is no one checking that you are the person signing up to vote in the first place, and certainly not checking your eligibility. And then on the other end, when you go to cast a vote, no one is checking to see that you're the one casting the vote in your name. It's complete chaos, which is why it's important to keep the voter rolls clean so that you're not impersonating these people that are on those voter rolls.
So hypothetically, we could pass a new law about voter ID and it's not likely to get challenged in the courts because the Supreme Court has said
It would still get challenged, but we would win that challenge.
We would win that challenge. Okay, we'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church.
Skyline Church.
You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with Ruth Wise of the Election Integrity Project California. And Ruth, during the break, you were telling me something very interesting because we were talking about voter ID laws and you were talking about the Obama administration and voter ID laws. I think the audience needs to hear some of that.
During the Obama administration, there are quite a few states that passed a voter ID law. And the instant that the law was passed, the administration filed suit against that state and against that law. And it held their voter ID laws up for years and years and years so they couldn't implement them and impact the midterm elections in that administration. Ultimately, most of them were upheld and okay, but in the meantime, they were able to put it off for 8 years in allowing voter ID to take place. And what I find interesting is that in almost every instance where voter ID has been implemented, the voter turnout among the very populations that they claim would be disenfranchised under the voter ID law actually increased significantly, often in double digits. So that only leads one to posit, perhaps, that the shenanigans that they get away with when there is no voter ID are actually more profitable than getting a double-digit increase in their voter base.
Why are more of them turning out when there is a voter ID law? I mean, I'm all for our voter ID laws, obviously, but why is that happening?
Because people tell you universally, well, now I know my vote counts.
Oh, I see.
Now it's a trustworthy system.
Now it's a trust, right. More faith in the system.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, related to voter ID, of course, is driver's licenses and the DMV. I know you had some things on that.
Right. Well, California passed what they call the new motor voter law, and it was implemented rather hastily and prematurely because they wanted to get it going before the election of 2016. And in order to do that, it meant that California now does not have an opt-in registration system. We have an opt-out registration system, which is really wrong, and I think it violates your civil rights to make the decision whether you want to participate or not.
Wait, so we're automatically registered?
When you interact with the DMV, they have to... Okay, it's not necessarily automatic, but that's how it's turning out. You have the option to say, no, don't register me, but what we're finding is whether you say yes or no, they're still registering you, and they are telling... Most people are being put as a no party preference. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about how so many people are bailing out of both parties, particularly the Republican Party, and the fastest growing, quote, party is the no party preference. But the DMV has a lot to do with that because people have a party preference and they have stated it and they have registered under that. But when they interact with the DMV, they're coming out finding that they have been moved to no party preference without their even knowing it.
Well, seeing the quality service we get from the DMV with everything else, it's just delightful that our elections are in the hands. So when people are in front of a Walmart saying, are you registered to vote, they don't necessarily have to be doing that?
Well,
or are they doing it because perhaps somebody doesn't have a driver's license? Are those the only ones that need to register?
Well, they didn't go through the voter through the DMV rolls and automatically register. It's only when you go in to interact. So it may be 5 years before you interact and get your license.
Oh, and sometimes people have their license renewed automatically.
Exactly. Well, no, but the automatic renewal has to include a voter registration form too.
This is insane.
So people are losing their choices here, whether to be registered or not. And this leads to a lot of things. You get a lot of people who don't want to be registered. They're disengaged. They don't want to be part of the process. But now we've added a ballot harvesting law. And so these people are being hounded. People are pounding on their door saying, hey, you know, have you voted? I'm here to collect your ballot. And some of them are being shamed, some of them being strong-armed, some of them being paid to turn their ballot over to these ballot harvesters just in the name of increasing voter turnout. And so we're going for quantity rather than quality now in our voting in California, and that is disastrous because now we're not really having an election.
How is it profiting people to try to strong-arm somebody into voting if they're not sure how that person is going to vote?
Because they do know how those people are voting. They're going to they have a high probability. They're going to the people that are registered the way they want them to
I
be.
See.
But
I
then
see.
Also, we have lots of reports that they have gone to people with blank ballots and said, here, let me help you fill your ballot out. Or here, we have one already filled out. All you have to do is sign it. All of that happened in 2018 in the ballot harvesting. And we had, of course, people actually arraigned, charged with paying people for their signatures and their ballots in Los Angeles County.
So what's on the docket? What kinds of future laws are you working, perhaps with Judicial Watch, perhaps with other entities, to get what other kinds of laws are on the horizon here in California?
We have a couple of very bad laws that have just been passed and will be implemented in this 2020 election. One of which is that you can now same day register at any polling place in the state, not just at the registrar's office where they have access to all the information and access to appropriate ballots.
So they can't verify you when you
No,
do that.
They can't. And you're supposed to then be issued a provisional ballot under those circumstances. But what we saw is that all of our poll workers are pretty much undertrained and overworked. And we already saw in 2018, when they weren't supposed to be registering people at the polls, they were. And in some cases, they were giving them a same-day ballot, so their eligibility could not be looked at before that. So that's a disaster.
We saw a lot of shenanigans in Florida during the last election. I'm guessing that goes on in a lot of places, and for some reason, it just came to our attention, the Florida version.
Well, that particular county in Florida, Broward, is infamous for that.
Every single time there's something. Yeah, and yet the same people keep going back to work there. It's really crazy. So, okay, what other kinds of laws are they passing that you're trying to overturn?
Well, the other thing, too, is we have now, finally, 14 years after we were supposed to, California has a statewide voter database. We haven't had that, even though the Help America Vote Act of 2002 mandated it. And once we finally came in compliance, it was certified, again, prematurely. It is not matured. It has so many fatal flaws, and yet it's being implemented. So a new law has now been passed that allows a same-day registrant to be given a same-day ballot rather than a provisional ballot if they can check with the vote cal and see whether your name's on it. Well, in the first place, your eligibility is not just a matter of whether you're on the rolls or not. Your eligibility is, how old are you? Where do you live where you say you're living? Are you a citizen? And then not even going to be looked at. But also the fact that VoteCal is so bad right now that that's not a good standard. And so we have several laws that are depending on the reliability of VoteCal, which is simply, you know, way premature to do that. Another thing on that I think people should know is that there's a lot of online registration happening now. And of course, you can't provide a signature. So where do they get that signature to compare for petitions and for vote by mail and for provisional ballots? They get it from the DMV records. So the way that you sign your DMV at the DMV is going to be the signature that's on file for you in the registrar's office. Well, people don't know that, so they kind of scribble, and they also are using that little electronic pad that's very difficult to provide a decent signature on. And we're hearing from registrars that there's really no way that the quality of signature they're getting from the DMV is so fuzzy and it's so poor that they basically have to accept everything because they don't have a signature against which to make a decent comparison.
Yeah, you know, I'm on the internet all the time, but boy, it's a double-edged sword. If this keeps going that direction, we're going to have some 16-year-old kid living in his parents' basement deciding our elections for us. We'll be right back.
You know, it's common in today's uncertain economy to feel apprehensive. After all, the seemingly limitless choices in the housing market can look quite confusing. You might even know people who shared their difficult experiences with the housing market, sometimes losing money instead of what they hoped would be a simple and profitable procedure. Well, here's the good news. Realty Executive All Areas here to help. Our track record is proven. Listen. Since 1994, we've sold thousands of homes in the San Diego area. What may seem like an obstacle to you is just a challenge for us. We thrive on multitasking and achieving goals. When faced with opportunities or unique situations, our level of determination goes into overdrive. We're confident we can use our skills to attend to your personal needs.
You can reach my friend Fred Valduti at 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717.
Or fredfalduti.com. That's Fred, FALDUTI.com.
Reader enthusiasm for the dangerous Christmas ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy! The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Welcome back to 96.1 FM, 1170 AM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Ruth Wise, we're down to our last segment. We'll be right in the middle of something when we have to suddenly sign off. So let me at this time thank you for coming on. It was a great honor to have you, and I'm sure we'll be checking into you from time to time because none of this stuff is going away anytime soon. Again, Ruth is with the Election Integrity Project of California. Tell us how people can get involved. Tell us about your website.
Yes, we'd like everyone to go to Election Integrity Project. It's actually E for election, I for integrity, P for project, dash CA for California. So the website is EIP-CA.com. Take a look around. We have a lot of educational things there. Please sign up to receive our email so you don't miss anything. And then go to the tab that says Join the Team and let us know that you're willing to volunteer in some way in your county, all the way from doing 2 hours of observation on election day, all the way up to helping with a county or community team, because we need more and more people to be overseeing this process if we are going to make a difference and get our rights back in the state of California. So please consider giving a little bit of time. We also appreciate donations because that's how we can stay alive. We're a tax-exempt organization. And I look forward to hearing from you. We will route you to the proper county where you can be active.
Okay, now there's a effort to recall Governor Newsom. And I know there's a lot of shenanigans going on with that as well. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Wow, that's not exactly.
I heard something from you this morning about how there's different petitions by different organizations, and I'm guessing that the state of California would not allow us to combine two petitions, aren't they?
That is correct.
So they're only going to look at the totality of one. So people don't know this, so the forces are already divided.
Or, now, of course, both of them could qualify, too. And I have not seen both of them, so I'm not sure how they differ. But there are two circulating out there. And if either one of them qualifies for the ballot, then it would be on the ballot in 2020. And if they both qualify, they'd both be on.
Okay. And which do you have a preference of which of these organizations people should sign up with?
Well, I do know that, and I'm not making a political statement here. I'm not advocating the recall. I'm just telling
That's
you what
okay.
I know.
I'm advocating the recall. You don't have to be on the hook.
I'm just telling you what I know about what's going on there. And I do know that there is one petition out there that I believe was initiated by Aaron Cruz, who I think was a candidate at one point for Secretary of State. And then the other one that's making itself known has been put forth by Dr. James Veltmeyer, who's local here in San Diego. And they are both collecting signatures. And that's about the end of what I know about them. Other than Aaron Cruz's was earlier and has a larger organization beneath it trying to collect the signatures.
Any idea? I know you have to be non-political. Any idea which way this might go? Does this really stand a chance? I'm inclined to think it doesn't, but maybe it can make some kind of statement.
Recalls are difficult. Recalls are extremely difficult, and especially in the environment in which we see that. For example, back in 2012, we worked with an organization to try to get voter ID on the ballot, because we believe that if it's on the ballot, it'll pass. It's got a 75% to 78%, you know, approval among the people, among the voters. But because this attorney general messed around with the wording of the ballot and made our petitions very difficult and ponderous, we weren't able to collect enough signatures. So, I mean, that's just kind of the way most of them go, unless there's huge, huge, big money behind them.
And I heard some of these petitions regarding Newsom, they only allow like two names per sheet of paper or something.
Yeah, I have heard that there's a short form and a long form.
That's bizarre. So nobody could go into a big group of people and get a bunch of signatures because it's limited to how many names.
Right.
Who comes up with these?
They're also very difficult to print on your own. Like sometimes you can download them, print them, sign them, get a neighbor to sign them and send them in. But again, this is something the attorney general is responsible for. And as in the case of our petitions for voter ID, they've done the same thing here and made this a long form, so that it has to be printed on that long legal paper, which most people can't do at home. So it just stalls the process.
Well, it's like the gas tax. People thought they were voting against it, and they were actually voting for it. I understood that you met Mike Pence recently. I know you didn't really get a chance to talk with him much, but what was the context of meeting him? And from afar, what was he like?
We participated in the Council on National Policy event in Louisiana a couple of weekends ago, and he was one of the many speakers who was featured. And at least to my surprise, after the speech, he came down and just allowed people to form a line and shook hands and talked with people, and it was kind of a thrill.
I don't know, how much are you not allowed to talk about the general election with your own viewpoint at all because of the organization you're with?
No, we don't take any political stands or talk about who we prefer or anything like that.
Okay. So, all right. Well, we'll just have to stick with a few of the comments from our listeners. And I'm going to catch up a little bit here with some comments from previous shows. This is from, and if you'd ever like to get a hold of us, you can reach us on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. This is from Fran regarding a program I did not long ago with National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg. You may recall we were discussing the historical revision of America. Does the stain of slavery eradicate anything good about American history? And we both pointed out that while slavery was a horrible institution, many of our forefathers did not own slaves. Some who did, such as Jefferson and Washington, experienced great pangs of conscience and personal conflict over the issue. Finally, it was because so many Americans realized that we were not living up to the principles of our Constitution that slavery ended. This ending of slavery, then, is a credit to our Constitution and our founding. Anyway, Fran writes, thank you, Bob and Mike, for clarifying these issues. That was an excellent commentary. How come you guys know so much? Well, Fran, speaking for myself, I never feel like I know all that much. I do study, but I am constantly reminded of the old saying, the more I learn, the more I realize how little I know. Anyway, Ruth Wise, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.